theirs. Barons does exactly and only whatever serves Barons best. Period. Keeping me alive serves him best. Period. But one day, it might not. Exclamation mark! Why did he have an unsealy silver in his study? Where did he go in it? What did he do? Besides carry dead women around. The shadow demons in the mirror had behaved just like the shades in the dark zone had when he'd walked through it, yielding to his passage, giving him wide berth. The Lord Master himself had taken one look at him recently and walked away. Who was Jericho Barons? What was Jericho Barons? Possibilities crowded my mind, each worse than the last. I had no way of knowing what he was, but I knew what he wasn't. He wasn't someone I was going to be telling anything about what I'd learned about the Shisadu last night. He kept his secrets? Fine. I was keeping mine. I had no desire to be the one responsible for putting Jericho Barons and the Dark Book in the same place together. He walked in one Unseelie Hallow and was hunting another. Gee, might that make him Unseelie of some kind? Maybe one of those dainty, transparent ones that could slip inside human skins and take them over, that I called grippers. Was it possible one had possession of him? I'd considered the idea once before, but swiftly discarded it. Now I had to admit that I'd had no basis for dismissing it, other than that, well, I'd been romanticizing him, telling myself Jericho Barons was too tough to be possessed by anyone or anything. Who was I to say that was true? I'd watched Agrippa walk straight into a young woman in the Temple Bar district not so long ago. The moment it had entered her, I'd no longer been able to sense Unseelie within her. She had passed for human to my she-seer senses. What if he was secretly working for the forces of darkness, conning me as cunningly as the Lord Master had seduced my sister into hunting the book? It would explain virtually everything about him. His inhuman strength, his knowledge of the Fae, his familiarity with and ownership of one of the dark glasses, the shades avoiding him, the Lord Master not confronting him. After all, they'd be on the same side. I blew out a frustrated breath. The only time I'd ever felt like I could take care of myself since I'd come to Dublin was the night Malush had nearly killed me, and I'd eaten Unseelie to survive. Revolting as it was, Fey flesh bestowed a degree of Fey power upon the person eating it, made them super strong, healed mortal wounds, even supposedly granted power in the black arts. I felt like I finally had an edge that night and hadn't needed anyone else to protect me. I'd been able to kick ass like all the other big bad men around me. I'd been Malusius' equal. I'd been nearly as deadly as Barons himself, perhaps as deadly, just not as well trained. I finally felt like a force to be reckoned with, someone capable of demanding answers, of throwing my weight around, without the constant fear of getting hurt or killed. It had been exhilarating. It had been freeing. But I couldn't eat Unseelie every day. It had too many downsides. Not only did it temporarily cancel out all my she-seer powers and make me vulnerable to my own spear. The Hallow killed anything Fey, even if you'd only eaten it. I'd learned that from watching Malush rot. But I'd realized over the past week that eating Unseelie was addictive, and a single meal was enough to birth that addiction. Malush hadn't been weak. The lure of Fey power was strong. I'd been dreaming about it at night, carving off chunks of live rhino boy, chewing, swallowing, feeling their incredible dark half-life entering my body, electrifying my blood, changing me, making me invincible again. I snapped out of my reverie to find a dainty sandwich perched at my mouth. A bit of flour from the bakery bread was on my lip. I thrust the sandwich back on the tray, carried the snacks to the table, and arranged the spread invitingly, near flowered paper plates and napkins I'd picked up on my way back from the pastry shop. Genteel Southern Mac was shamed by my lack of china and silver. Spear-toting Mac cared only that there might be leftovers and food should never be wasted. People were starving in third-world countries. I glanced at my watch. If Jane was a punctual man, he'd be here in 3 minutes, and I would put my plan into action. It was risky, but necessary. Last night, Between nightmares in which I was chasing the book, and each time I got close to it, it morphed into not the beast, but Barons, I'd lay awake, sorting through and discarding ideas until I'd struck upon one that had impressed even me with its cleverness. The key to finding the Shi Sidhu was tracking the most heinous crimes. Where chaos and brutality reigned, it would be found. At first, I decided to try to get my hands on a police radio, but the logistics of stealing one and monitoring it 24/7 had defeated me. What I needed, I'd realized, I already had. Inspector Jane. Mom always told me not to put all my eggs in one basket, and that was exactly what I'd been doing with Barons. Who had I cultivated as my backup plan? No one. I needed to diversify. If I could persuade one of the Garda to call whenever they received a report of the type of crime that fit my parameters, I'd get an instant lead without being tied to a radio. I could rush to the crime scene, hoping the book was still close enough that I could sense it, and use my she-seer senses to track it. Most of the tips would probably prove fruitless, but eventually I was bound to get lucky at least once. Jane was going to be my informant. One might wonder how I planned to achieve such a monumental twist on the usual police-civilian relationship. That was the brilliant part of my simple plan. Of course, I had no idea what to do if I managed to actually locate the Shi Sidhu. I couldn't even get close to it, and if I managed to, somehow, I'd seen what happened to people who touched it. Still, I had to hunt it. It was one of those things programmed into my genes along with my innate fear of hunters, knee-jerk reactions to Hallows, and constant urge to run around warning people about the Fae, even though I knew I'd never be believed. Today I needed to be believed. Jane wanted to know what was going on. Today I would show him. The voice of my conscience protested thinly. I quashed it. Conscience wasn't going to keep me alive. I eyed the tray. My mouth watered. Those were no simple egg, tuna, or chicken salad sandwiches, those scrumptious little confections I'd worked so hard to make, and was now dying to eat, dreaming of eating, hungering for in a way I'd never hungered for human food. Those wriggling little delicacies were unseely salad sandwiches. And Jane was about to get one great big eye-opening look at his city. It went about as well as train wrecks do. The inspector ate only two of my tiny sandwiches, the first because he hadn't expected it to taste so awful, the second, I think, because he thought surely the first must have been a mistake. By the time he'd swallowed the second one, he could see that the sandwiches were moving on his plate, and there'd been no chance of getting a third one into him. I wasn't sure how long the effects of such a small amount of unseelie would last, but I figured he had a day or two of it. I hadn't told him about the super strength, regenerative powers, or skill in the black arts that resulted from eating unseelie. Only I knew he was currently strong enough to crush me with a single blow. My hands had trembled when I'd forced myself to flush the rest of the uneaten delicacies down the toilet before we'd left. I had set two aside in case of emergency. Halfway out the door, I'd called my own bluff and gone back to flush those two. I'd caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror, white-faced with the strain of denying myself what I so badly wanted, the bliss of strength, safety from my countless enemies roaming the streets of Dublin, not to mention being able to hold my own with Barons. I'd clung to the edge of the toilet, watching the chunks of meat swirl around in the porcelain-cradled whirlpool until they had disappeared. We stood on the outskirts of the Temple Bar district, and I was exhausted. I'd been with Jane for 7 long hours, and I didn't like him any better now than before I'd fed him unseelie and forced him to see what was going on in his world. He didn't like me any better either. In fact, I was pretty sure he was going to hate me for the rest of his life for what I'd made him confront tonight. I had drugged him, he'd insisted, shortly after I'd commenced our little monster tour, given him hallucinogens. He was going to have me arrested for trafficking in narcotics. He was going to have me kicked out of Ireland and sent home to prison. We both knew he wouldn't. It had taken hours of steering him around Dublin, showing him what was in the bars, driving the cabs, and running the vendor stands, to get through to him, but I'd finally managed. I'd had to coach him the entire time on how to act, how to sneak looks and not to betray us, unless he wanted to end up as dead as O'Duffy. Regardless of what I might think of his methods of handling me, Inspector Jane was a fine cop, with sound instincts, whether he liked what they were telling him or not. Though he'd insisted none of it was real, he'd nonetheless employed the stealth of 22 years of investigative procedure. He'd regarded the mouthless, sad, wet-eyed monsters, and the leather-winged gargoyles, and the hulking masses of deformed limbs and oozing flesh with the perfect impassivity of a non-believer. He'd slipped up only once, a few minutes ago. I had quickly nulled and stabbed 3 rhino boys in the dark alley we'd been using as a shortcut. Jane stood there, staring down at their gray-limbed bodies, absorbing the lumpy faces with jutting jaws and tusk-like teeth, the beady eyes and elephant skin, the open wounds, revealing pinkish-gray flesh marbled with pus-filled cysts.
"You fed me this?"
he said finally. I shrugged. It was the only way I knew to show you what you needed to see.
"Pieces of these things were in those little sandwiches?"
His voice rose. His ruddy face was pale. "Uh-huh." He looked at me, his Adam's apple convulsing, and for a moment I thought he was going to vomit, but he got it under control.
"Lady, you are one sick fuck."
"Come on, there's one more thing I want you to see," I told him.
"I've seen enough."
"No, you haven't. Not yet." I had saved the worst for last. I concluded our sightseeing tour at the edge of a new dark zone on the north side of the River Liffey that I'd been planning to scout, so I could ink its parameters on the map I'd mailed up on my bedroom wall. "Remember those places you couldn't find on the maps?" I said. "The area next to the bookstore? The ones O'Duffy was checking into? This is what they are." I waved a hand down the street. Jane took a step toward the darkness, and I barked, "Don't leave the light!" He stopped beneath a street lamp and leaned against it. I watched his face as he watched the shade slithering hungrily at the edge of the darkness.
"And you expect me to believe these shadows eat people?"
he finally said tightly. "If you don't believe me, go home, get one of your kids, and send them in. See what happens." I didn't feel as cold as I sounded when I said it, but I had to get through to him, and to do that I needed to hit him where he lived, bring the threat as close to home as I could.
"Don't you ever mention my children to me again,"
he shouted, turning on me.
"Do you hear me? Never!"
"When this wears off," I pointed out, "you'll no longer know where the dark zones are. Your children might walk to school through one and never come home again. Will you go looking for their piles? Will you even know where to look? Will you die trying?"
"Are you threatening me?"
Big hands fisting, he bristled toward me. I stood my ground. "No, I'm offering to help you. I'm offering you a deal. In a day, give or take a little, you won't be able to see any of this anymore. You won't have any idea where the danger to your family lies, and it's all around you. I can keep you informed. I can tell you where the dark zones are, where the majority of the Unseelie are gathering, and how best to keep your wife and children safe. If it gets really bad, I can tell you when to get out of town and where to go. All I want in exchange is a little information. It's not like I'm asking you to help me commit crimes. I'm asking you to help me try to prevent them. We're on the same side, Inspector. Until tonight, you just didn't know what was on the other side. Now you do. Help me stop what's happening in this city."
"This is insane."
"Insane or not, it's real." I'd had a hard time accepting that, too. The bridge connecting the sane world to this dark, fae-infested Dublin had taken me many faltering steps to cross. "It killed O'Duffy. Will you let it kill you?" He looked away and said nothing. At that moment, I knew I'd won. I knew he would call me the next time a crime was radioed in. He would hate every minute of it. He would tell himself he was crazy. But he would make the call, and that was all I needed. I left Jane at the Garda station on Pierce Street, assuring him the vision would wear off soon. As we parted, I saw the same hollow expression in his eyes I sometimes glimpsed in my own. I felt sorry for him. But I needed someone on the inside at the Garter, and now I had him. Besides, if I hadn't opened his eyes tonight and forced him to see what was going on, he'd have ended up dead in a matter of days. He'd been nosing around too much. He'd have spotted an abandoned car down some back alley and walked into a dark zone at night, or whoever'd slit O'Duffy's throat to silence him would have slit Jane's next. He'd been a walking dead man. Now, at least, he had a chance. Chapter 3. I die for him. There's nothing else to say. I give the last breath in my body and the last hope in my heart to keep him alive. When I thought I was crazy, he came to me and made sense of it all. He helped me understand what I was, showed me how to hunt and hide. He taught me that there are necessary lies. I've been learning a lot about those lately. Every time Matt calls, I get more practice. I'd die for her, too. He's made me see myself differently. He's let me be the woman I always wanted to be. Not the perfect daughter and honor student who feels like she has to do all the right things to make Mom and Dad proud. Or the perfect big sister who always tries to set a shining example for Mac and keep the nosy neighbors from ever turning their sharp, gossipy tongues our way. I hate small-town busybodies. I always wanted to be more like Mac. She doesn't do anything she doesn't feel like doing. When people call her lazy and selfish, she doesn't care. She's happy. I wonder if she knows how proud I am of her for that. But things are different now. Here, in Dublin, with him, I can be anyone I want to be. I'm no longer trapped in a small town in the deep south, forced to be the good girl. I'm free. He calls me his queen of the night. He shows me the wonders in this incredible city. He encourages me to find my own way and to choose what I think is right or wrong. And the sex, God, the sex. I never knew what sex was until him. It's not soft music and candlelight, a choice, a deliberate action. It's as involuntary as breathing and as impossible not to do. It's slammed up against a wall in a dark alley, or flat on my back on cold concrete because I can't stand one more second without him. It's on my hands and knees, dry-mouthed, hard in my throat, waiting for the moment he touches me and I'm alive again. It's punishing and purifying, velvet and violent, and it makes everything else melt away, until nothing matters but getting him inside me, and I wouldn't just die for him, I'd kill for him too. Like I did tonight. And when I see her tomorrow.
I hated him. Oh, I'd hated my sister's murderer before, but now I hated him even more. Here in my white-knuckled hand was proof that the Lord Master had used his dark powers on Alina, turned her into someone she wasn't before killing her. A page torn from her journal, penned in the beautiful, gently sloping hand she'd begun perfecting before I'd even learned to read. A page so unlike Alina that it couldn't have been more obvious he'd brainwashed her, done that voice thing to her he'd done to me the other night in the caves beneath the burn, when he demanded I give him the amulet and come with him, and I'd been unable to resist or deny him. With the power of a few mere words, he'd turned me into a mindless automaton. If not for Barons, I would have trundled off behind him enslaved. But Barons, too, was skilled in the druid power of voice, and had freed me from the Lord Master's spell. I knew my sister. She'd been happy in Ashford. She'd loved being the person she was, bright, successful, and fun, idolized by me and most everyone else in town, the one whose smiling face was always in the newspaper for some honor or another, the one who did everything right. He calls me his queen of the night. Queen of the night, my petunia. My sister had never wanted to be queen of anything. But if she had, it certainly wouldn't have been the night. It would have been something festive, like Ashford's annual peach and pumpkin parade. She would have worn a shiny orange ribbon and a silver tiara, and been on the front page of the Ashford Journal Constitution the next day. I always wanted to be more like Mac. She'd never once said she wished she was more like me. When people call her lazy and selfish, she doesn't care.
Had people really said that about me? Had I been deaf back then, or just too dumb to care? And what she'd written about sex was definitely not my sister. Alina didn't like it doggy style. She'd considered it demeaning. "On your hands and knees, babe, yeah, right," she'd say, and laugh. "Up yours." "See, not Alina," I told the page. Who had my sister killed the night she'd written this entry? A monster? Or had the Lord Master brainwashed her into killing one of the good guys for him? Who had she been going to see the next day? Had she been planning to kill her, too? Were they humans she'd been killing, or Fae? If they were Fae, how had she been killing them? I had the spear. Danny, a courier for Post-Haste Incorporated, the false front for the organization of she-seers run by the Grand Mistress Rowena, had the sword. Those were the only two weapons I knew of that could kill a Fae. Had Alina discovered some other weapon I didn't know about? Of all the pages in her journal, why had someone sent me this page? Most important and troubling of all, who had sent it to me? Who had my sister's journal? Blaine, Barons, and Rowena all denied ever having met her. Might the Lord Master himself have sent it, thinking, perhaps, in his twisted arrogance, that it would make me find him as attractive as my sister had? As usual, I was adrift in a sea of questions, and if answers were lifeboats, I was in imminent danger of drowning. I picked up the envelope and studied it. Plain, off-white vellum, thick and tasteful enough to have been custom-ordered. Still, it told me nothing. The address, neatly typed in generic font, could have come from any inkjet or laser printer anywhere in the world. "Michaela Lane, care of Barron's Books and Baubles," it said. There was no return address. The only clue it offered was a Dublin postmark, dated yesterday, and that was no clue at all. I sipped my coffee, thinking. I'd gotten up early this morning, dressed, and hurried down from my bedroom on the top floor of the shop so I could stock the new dailies and monthlies, but I'd gotten distracted by the stack of mail piled on the counter. 3 bills into it, I'd found the envelope containing the page from Alina's journal. The pile of mail teetered. The monthlies were still boxed. I closed my eyes and rubbed them. I'd been hunting for my sister's journal, desperate to find it before someone else did, but it was too late. Someone else had gotten to it before me. Someone else was privy to her innermost thoughts, and had at their disposal all the knowledge she'd gained since she'd arrived on Ireland's fae-infested shores. What other secrets did her diary contain, besides unflattering personal insight into me? Had she written about the location of any of the hallows or relics we needed? Did someone else know about the Shisadu and how it was moving around? Were I and my anonymous foe both hoping to track it the same way? The phone began to ring, a local number. I ignored it. Everyone that mattered to me had my cell phone number. Seeing Alina's handwriting, hearing her words spoken aloud in my mind as I'd read them, had left me feeling raw. I was in no mood to talk books to a customer. The phone finally stopped ringing, but after a 3-second pause began again. The third time it started ringing, I picked it up just to shut it up. It was Christian McKelter, wondering what had happened to me the other night and why I hadn't returned any of his calls. I could hardly tell him it was because I'd been a little busy being driven to my knees by a sentient book, watching my murderous employer tote a dead body around, serving addictive cannibalistic tea to a homicide detective in order to turn him into my informant, then steering him around the city, forcing him to see monsters, and just now reading up on how my sister had loved having sex with the very monster responsible for bringing the rest of the monsters through to our world. No, I was quite certain all of that would only alienate a man I was hoping might prove a valuable source of information. So I offered him a colorful bouquet of lies, and made a new date with him for tonight. By the time I left to go see Christian, Barron still hadn't put in an appearance, and I was glad. I wasn't ready to face him yet. As I locked up the bookstore, I scanned the dark zone. 3 shades towed the edge of the light. The rest slithered and slid in the shadows. Nothing had changed. Their prison of darkness still held. I turned briskly to my left and headed for Trinity College, where Christian worked in the ancient languages department. I'd met him several weeks ago, when Behrens had sent me to pick up an envelope from the woman who ran the department. She hadn't been there, but Christian had. Then we'd run into each other a second time, a week ago, in a pub, where he'd stunned me by telling me he'd known my sister and even knew what she and I were. Our conversation had been rudely interrupted by Behrens, who'd called to warn me hunters were in the city and told me to return to the bookstore. I'd been planning to call Christian the next day and find out what else he knew, but on my way home, I'd been cornered by hunters and abducted by Malouche, and needless to say, I'd had my hands a little full battling for my life. Then, the other night, the debilitating appearance of the Shisadu had prevented us from meeting again. I was anxious to find out what he knew. I pushed my curls back from my forehead and fluffed them with my fingers. I'd dressed up again tonight, wound a brilliant silk scarf through my hair and tied it, letting the brightly colored ends trail over my shoulder and drape softly in my cleavage. I was nothing if not determined. At least twice a week I would wear bright, pretty clothes. I was afraid if I didn't, I'd forget who I was. I'd turn into what I felt like, a grungy, weapon-bearing, pissy, resentful, vengeance-hungry bitch. The girl with long blonde hair, perfect makeup and nails might be gone, but I was still pretty. My shoulder-length Arabian night hair curled flatteringly around my face, complementing my green eyes and clear skin. Coupling red lipstick with my darker do made me look older, sexier than I used to. I'd chosen clothes tonight that hugged my curves and showed them to their best advantage. I was wearing a cream skirt with a snug yellow sweater in honor of Alina. Beneath a short, stylish cream raincoat that concealed 8 flashlights, 2 knives, and a spear. High heels and pearls. Thad said the day they'd picked us up from the adoption agency, Alina had been dressed like a sunbeam and I'd been a rainbow. Alina. Her absence in my life was so painful that it was a presence. Grief still kicked me awake in the morning, kept me company all day, and crawled into bed with me at night. Dublin was a constant reminder of her. She was here in every street, in the face of every young co-ed who had no idea what was walking right alongside her, masquerading as human. She was laughing in the pubs and dying later in the dark. She was all the people I couldn't save. I skirted the busy, crack-filled streets of Temple Bar and headed straight for the college. Last night I'd walked through the heavily trafficked tourist zone that boasted over 600 pubs, but tonight I was in no mood to be reminded that there were only 2 known weapons that could kill Fay and hundreds, if not thousands, of Unseelie in the city. My encounter with the Shisadu had sobered me. The sheer evilness of the thing had served as a grim reminder that, although I might have recently triumphed in an against-all-odds type of situation and walked out of it stronger, there was worse in store for me yet. When I arrived at the office that housed the staff of the Ancient Languages Department, Christian met me at the door, looking young, hip, and hot in faded jeans, rugged boots, and a sweater, his long dark hair pulled back at his nape in a leather thong. He gave me a charged, appreciative look, making me glad I'd taken care with my appearance. A woman likes to know her efforts are paying off. He took my arm and suggested we go somewhere else.
"They're discussing the budget,"
he advised in a deep, husky brogue, adjusting his stuffed backpack over a well-muscled shoulder. "Don't you need to stay?"
"Nah. Only full-timers have to suffer the meetings. I'm part-time."
He flashed a killer smile that made me stand up straight. Christian was the kind of good-looking that hit you over the head, made you keep stealing second and third glances at him. The 5 o'clock shadow on the strong jaw, the broad shoulders, the flawless dark skin, and the striking tiger eyes. There was an easy grace to his long-limbed body that hinted at maturity beyond his years.
"Besides, it's not a place I'm comfortable talking, and we've got a great deal to talk about, lass."
I hope that meant someone was finally going to tell me something useful about my sister. He led me to a windowless study room off a vending area in the nearly deserted basement of the building. We settled into folding metal chairs, beneath the hum of fluorescent lights, where I imagined Alina might have sat and studied a time or two. I wasted no time asking Christian how he'd met her. I wondered if he'd been one of the boys she'd dated when she'd first come over, before she'd been brainwashed by the Lord Master. I sure would have. In another life. A normal one.
She came to the ALD, looking for someone to translate a page of text.
What kind of text? I thought instantly of the Shisadu.
Nothing I could translate. My uncles couldn't either.
I assumed his uncles were linguists and said so. He smiled faintly, as if amused by the question.
They're historians, after a fashion, knowledgeable about antiquities and such. I've never stumbled across a text they couldn't translate.
Did you ever find out what it was?
My turn, Mac. I've a few questions of my own. What happened to you the other night? Why'd you cry off?
I told you. My dad called and we got to talking about Mom and how she's getting worse and I lost track of time. Then by the time I got off the phone, something I ate for dinner wasn't agreeing with me and I felt so sick I just went to bed.
Nice try,
he said dryly.
Now, tell me the truth.
I just did.
No, you didn't. You're lying. I hear it in your voice.
You can't hear whether I'm lying in my voice, I scoffed. Body language might tell you a thing or two, but...
Yes, I can.
He cut me off with a faintly bitter flash of that killer smile.
Literally. You lie. I hear it. And I wish I didn't. You have no idea how often people lie. All the bloody time about everything, even stupid things that make no sense to bother lying about. Truth between us, Mac, or nothing at all. Your choice. But don't bother trying to fool me, you can't.
I began to ease off my coat, remembered my arsenal, and thought better of it, settled back in my chair and crossed my legs, one high heel swinging. I searched his face. My God, he was serious. You really know when people are lying? He nodded. Prove it.
Got a boyfriend?
No.
Is there a man you're interested in?
No.
You're lying.
I stiffened. I am not.
Yes, you are. He may not be a boyfriend, but there's some man you're interested in enough that you're thinking about having sex with him.
I glared. I am not. And you can't possibly know that. He shrugged.
Sorry, Mac. I hear the truth even when the person isn't admitting it to themselves.
One dark brow lifted.
I don't suppose it might be me.
I blushed. He just made me think it. Us. Naked. Wow. I was a perfectly healthy woman, and he was a gorgeous man. No, I said, embarrassed. He laughed, gold eyes glittering.
Lie. A whopper. Gotta love that. Have I told you I'm a big believer in fulfilling a woman's fantasies?
I rolled my eyes. I wasn't thinking it before you said it. You put the thought in my head, and then there it was, and I was thinking it. And that worried me, because I could think of only two other people, and I was using that term loosely about both, that I might have been thinking of having sex with before he'd made me think about having sex with him, and both were terrible choices. This doesn't prove anything.
Guess you'll have to take me on faith, then, until you get to know me. I take you on faith. I don't ask you to prove that you see the fae.
People think about having sex all the time, I said irritably. Are you aware of every time you're thinking about it, and with who?
Bless the saints, no. I wouldn't get anything done. Most of the time it's just background music, you know. Sex, 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 find it, have it, drown in it before more perfectly good sperm die, playing in my head to an easy, sensuous beat. Then somebody like you walks in and it ratchets up to that Nine Inch Nails song my uncle plays all the time for his wife.
He grimaced.
We leave the castle and go somewhere else when he does that.
Your uncle listens to Trent Reznor? I blinked. You live in a castle? I didn't know which thought was weirder.
Big, drafty, not as impressive as it sounds. and not all my uncles are as cool as Digus. Men want to be him. Women adore him. It's irritating, naturally. I never introduce my girlfriends to him.
If he was anything like Christian, I could see why.
Point is, Mac, don't lie to me. I will know, and I won't put up with it.
I pondered his claim. I knew what it was like to be capable of doing something others would consider impossible. I decided to take him at face value and see what came of it. Time would tell. So is it a gift of birth, like me being a she-seer?
You don't think being a she-seer is a gift. Nor is my little problem, and yes, much to my parents' inconvenience, I was born this way. There are necessary lies, or at least kind ones. I never got to hear any of them. I don't get to hear them now.
Alina had said the same thing. Necessary lies. Well, look on the bright side of it. You don't get to hear any lies, but nobody around you gets to tell any either. Do you think it's easy to be around someone that you have to tell the truth to all the... Oh! I drew up short. You don't have many friends, do you? Not if he spoke his mind freely and he looked like the kind of guy that did. He shot me a cool look.
Why'd you cry off last night?
I had a close call with a dark haller, and they make me too sick to function if I get too close. He leaned forward, elbows on his knees, and stared at me with fascination.
Now that was a celestial choir of truth, lass. You saw a dark hollow? Which one?
How do you know about the dark hallows? Who are you, and what's your involvement in this? I didn't need any more mystifying men in my life.
How much truth will you give me?
I hesitated only briefly. Of all the men I'd met in Dublin, he seemed the most like me, essentially normal, but afflicted with an unwanted, life-altering talent. As much as I can, if you do the same. He nodded, satisfied, then settled back in his chair.
I come from a clan that, in ancient times, served the Fae.
The Celta, Christian told me, had once been high druids to the Tuatha De Danann, many thousands of years ago, during that brief time in which the Fae had attempted to play nice and to coexist with man. Something had happened that shattered the fragile peace. He skimmed over this part. But whatever it was, it caused Fae and man to go their separate ways, and not amicably. A compact was negotiated to permit both races to exist on the same planet, but keep the realm separate, and the Celta were given the duty of performing certain rituals to maintain the walls between them. Over the millennia, they performed them faithfully with few exceptions, and if they failed in some small way, they always managed to make up for it in the nick of time. But in recent years, the rituals stopped going as expected. On those pre-appointed nights of the year when the Celta were to perform their magic, some other dark magic had risen up and prevented the pledge from being reinforced, and the tithe from being fully paid. Although this other magic hadn't been able to collapse the walls between our worlds, it had seriously weakened them. Christian's uncles believed the walls would not hold through another incomplete ritual. The Queen of the Seelie, Avil, who in the past had always appeared in times of crisis, had yet to be seen, although they'd invoked her by every spell they had at their disposal. I was riveted by the story. The thought that for thousands of years a clan in the Highlands of Scotland had been protecting mankind from the Fae fascinated me, especially if they were all like Christian, gorgeous, sexy, self-possessed. It was comforting to know there were other bloodlines out there in the world with special, unusual powers. I wasn't alone in my awareness of what was happening to our world. I'd found someone besides Barons who had more information than me, and he was willing to share it.
My uncles believe something has happened to the Queen,
he said,
and as her power diminishes, another's grows. The walls continue to weaken, and if we don't figure out something by the time the next ritual must be performed, they'll come down.
What'll happen then? I asked in a hushed voice. Will the compact be broken?
My uncles believe the compact already is broken, that the walls are holding only because of the increase in tithes they keep paying. Fae magic is strange stuff.
He paused then, said tightly.
At the last rites, we had to use blood, Kelter blood, in a pagan ritual. It's unheard of. We've never used blood before. Uncle Cain knew how to do it. It was dirty magic. I could feel it. What we did was wrong, but it was the only thing we could do.
I understood that feeling. What I'd done to Jane would never sit entirely well with me, but I'd been unable to think of an alternative. It hadn't been dirty magic, just dirty tea. Manipulative. Ruthless. But I've begun to understand that you can only afford to play nice when there's not much at stake. And if the walls come down completely? I reiterated my earlier question. I wanted to know just how bad things might get.
When the Fae walked among us before, only the Seelie did. The Unseelie have been imprisoned for so long that mere whispers of myths remain. If the walls come down completely, all the Unseelie will be freed, not just the lower castes that are currently managing to get through somehow. The most powerful of the Unseelie royal houses will escape.
He paused, and when he spoke again his voice was low, urgent.
Myth equates the heads of those four houses, the Dark Princes, with the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
I knew who they were. Death, pestilence, war, and famine. The Unseelie I'd seen so far were bad enough. I had no desire to ever encounter a royal dark fae.
It'll get bad, Mac. They'll turn our world into a living nightmare. My uncles believe the Seelie may not be able to re-imprison the Unseelie if they escape.
Was this why everyone was after the Shisadu? Did it contain the spells necessary to imprison the Unseelie? Maybe even keep the walls from coming down in the first place? It would certainly explain why Vlaine and the Queen wanted it, why Alina had wanted me to find it before the Lord Master did. No doubt if he got his hands on it, he'd hurry up and destroy it to make sure no one could ever imprison his army again. I wondered where Barons fit in. Would he really sell it to the highest bidder? I couldn't dwell on the possibility of Unseelie overrunning our world. Keeping my thoughts tightly focused on my goals was the key to keeping my fears in check. Tell me more about Alina. At my swift change of subject, he looked relieved, and I realized I wasn't the only one who felt like I was charged with an impossible task. It was no wonder Christian seemed mature beyond his years. He was. He had his own fate-of-the-world issues to deal with.
I'm sorry, Mac, but I don't have much more to say. I tried to make friends with her. Although my uncles couldn't translate the text, they knew where it had come from, and we needed to know how she'd gotten it. It was a photocopy of a page from an ancient book.
Called the Shisadu. The Beast, I thought, and my soul shivered.
I wondered if you knew about it. What do you know? Do you know where it is?
I didn't know exactly where it was at the moment, and brandished that thought like a shield when I answered, no, in case he really was a walking, breathing lie detector. Because he was searching my gaze far too intently for my comfort, I added quickly, what happened when you tried to make friends with my sister?
She rebuffed my efforts. She was deeply involved with someone, and I got the impression he was very possessive. Didn't like her talking to anyone.
Did you ever meet him?
No, I caught a glimpse of him once. Fleeting. Don't remember much, which makes me believe he was Fae. They mess with your head if they don't want you to see them.
Did you tell my sister the stuff you just told me?
I didn't get the chance.
If you never became friends, how did you find out she was a She-Seer? How did you find out about me?
I followed her a few times.
He said.
She was always watching things that weren't there, studying empty spaces. I was raised on stories of She-Seers. My family is into old myths and lore. I put two and two together.
And me? He shrugged.
You were poking around Trinity asking about her. Besides, family's a matter of public record, if you know where to look.
With all my enemies, those were records I'd like destroyed. I was grateful my parents were 4,000 miles away.
Which Dark Hala did you have a close call with last night?
He asked casually. The amulet.
Lie.
I tested him. The scepter.
Lie again. And there is no such thing.
You're right. It was the box, I said heavily.
I'm waiting for the truth, Mac.
I shrugged. Is she Sadu? I offered, like I didn't really mean it. He exploded out of his chair.
What the? Are you kidding me? No need to answer that. I know you're not. You said you didn't know where it was.
I don't know. I saw it in passing.
Here? In Dublin?
I nodded. It's gone. I have no idea where it was taken.
Who?
Christian began.
Hi, guys. What's up?
Christian's gaze slid past me to the door. He stiffened.
Hey, man. I didn't hear you come in.
I hadn't either.
How long have you been standing there?
I just opened the door. I thought I heard you in here.
I turned in my chair. The second time he'd spoken, I'd recognized the voice. The dreamy-eyed guy I'd seen in the museum and then run into later on the street the day I'd been interrogated by Inspector Jane was filling the doorway with his dark, dreamy good looks. He told me he worked at the ALD, but I'd put him out of my mind. Like Christian, in another life, I'd have dated him in a heartbeat. Why, then, had it been Barron's I'd ended up kissing?
Hey, beautiful girl. Fancy seeing you here. Small world, isn't it?
Hey. I blushed a little. I do that when a good-looking guy calls me beautiful, especially now that every time I look in a mirror, I hardly recognize myself. Ironically, when your world comes completely unglued, it's the paste of the everyday meaningless little things that suddenly seem like real gems.
You two know each other?
Christian looked baffled. We've run into each other a time or two, I replied.
They're looking for you back at the office, Chris,
said the dreamy-eyed guy.
Elle wants to talk to you.
Can't it wait?
Said Christian impatiently. He shrugged.
She didn't seem to think so. Something about misappropriated funds or something. I told her I'm sure it's just a bookkeeping error, but she's on one.
Christian rolled his eyes.
That woman is impossible. Will you tell her I'll be there in 5?
Sure, man.
His gaze cut to me.
Is this the boyfriend you meant?
I shook my head.
But you have one.
Dozens, remember? He laughed.
See you around, beautiful girl. 5 minutes, Chris. You know how Elle gets about you.
Dragging a finger across his throat, he grinned and left. Christian hurried to the door and shut it.
Okay, we've got to talk fast, because I need this job for the time being, and lately Elle seems to be looking for any reason to fire me. There's something you need to see.
He opened his backpack and pulled out a leather notebook tied with knotted cord.
My uncle sent me to Dublin for a reason, Mac. Well, several. But only one immediately concerns you. I've been watching your employer.
Barron's? Why? What had he learned? Something that might help me sort through my own worries about who and what he was?
My uncles are collectors. Everything they've been trying to collect for the past few years, your employer has been going after too. Some of it he's gotten. Some of it my uncles have gotten. And still other items have gone to a third party.
He withdrew a file from his notebook and handed me a magazine folded open to a page.
Is that Jericho Barron's?
A brief glance was enough. Yes. He was nearly lost in the shadows, standing behind a group of men, but the flash had caught his face at just the right angle to bathe it starkly in light. Though the photo was grainy, there was no mistaking him. Barron's is unusual. He says his ancestry is Basque and Pict. Criminals and barbarians, I'd mocked when he told me. He certainly looks the part.
How old would you say he is?
In this picture?
No, now.
He's 30. I saw it on his driver's license. His birthday was coming up. On Halloween, he'd be 31.
Look at the date on the magazine.
I flipped to the cover. The photo had been taken 17 years ago, which meant he'd been 13 at the time of the photograph, if the date on his driver's license was to be believed. Obviously it wasn't. No 13-year-old boy in the world looked that mature. Christian handed me another magazine, this one featuring a gathering of wealthy socialites at a gala at a British museum. Again, Behrens was unmistakable in it, even half-turned as he was from the camera. Same hair and faultlessly tailored clothing, same expression on the haughty old-world face, a mixture of boredom and predatory amusement. I flipped to the cover. This photo had been taken 41 years ago. I flipped back to the photo and studied it carefully, looking for anomalies. There were none. It was either Behrens, or he had a grandfather who'd been his identical twin, and if this was Behrens in the photo, he was currently 71 years old. Next, Christian passed me a photocopy of a newspaper article with a faded black-and-white photo of a group of uniformed men. Behrens was the only one not wearing a uniform. As was the case in the last two photos, he was angled slightly away, as if trying to slip off before the shot could be snapped. And, as was the case in the last two photos, he didn't look a day older or younger than he did today.
Do you know who that is?
Christian pointed to the big, raw-boned, 30-ish man in the center of the photograph. I shook my head.
Michael Collins. He was a famous Irish revolutionary leader.
So?
He was killed in 1922. This picture was taken 2 months before he died.
I did some rapid math. That would mean Behrens wasn't 71. He was an extremely well-preserved 115. Maybe he had a relative, I offered, with a strong genetic resemblance.
You don't believe that,
he said flatly.
Why do people do that? Say things out loud they don't even remotely believe.
He was right. I didn't believe it. The pictures were too identical. I'd spent enough time with Jericho Behrens that I knew the way his limbs moved, the way he stood, the expressions he wore. It was him in all those pictures. Inside, a part of me went very still. Behrens was old, impossibly old. Being kept alive by gripper possession? Was that possible? Are there more of these? I wondered how far back Christian's uncles had traced him. I wanted to take these photographs with me, slap them against Behrens's chest, and demand answers, even though I knew I'd never get any. He glanced at his watch.
Yes, but I have to go.
Let me hold on to these a few days.
No way. My uncles would kill me if Behrens got his hands on them.
I relinquished them reluctantly. I could begin research of my own, now that I knew what to look for. I wasn't sure I needed to. What difference if Behrens were 100, 1,000, or several thousand? The point was, he was inhuman. The question was, how bad was whatever he really was?
I'm leaving for Inverness tomorrow, and won't be back for a week. There are things at home I need to take care of. Come and see me next Thursday. I believe you and I can help each other.
He paused, then said,
I believe we may need to help each other, Mac. I think our purposes may be tied together.
I nodded as we walked out, although I had my doubts. I'd been turning into a real bottom liner lately, and regardless of how much Christian might know, or his involvement in maintaining the walls between realms, or how much I might enjoy his company, the bottom line was he was a man who couldn't see the Fae, and that meant, in a fight, he'd be a liability, one more person I'd have to worry about keeping alive. And lately, I was having a hard enough time keeping myself alive. I shouldered past tourists, wound my way between rhino boys and assorted unseelie, and was a few blocks from the bookstore, passing one of the countless pubs that characterized Temple Bar, when I glanced in the window. And there she was, Alina, sitting with a group of friends in a low-backed corner snug, tipping back a bottle of beer, lowering it and laughing at something the guy next to her had just said. I closed my eyes. I knew what this was, and he needed to get some new tricks. I opened them and glanced down at myself. At least I wasn't naked. "Vlaine," I said, "did I ever have a bone to pick with him?"
"Michaela."
Ignoring the reflection of the tall, erotic, golden creature behind my shoulder, I focused that ancient, alien, she-seer place inside my brain on the illusion. "Show me what is true," I demanded. The vision of Alina ruptured with the suddenness of a bubble bursting, revealing a group of boisterous rugby players toasting their latest victory. I turned and was slammed upside the head with Death by Sex Faye. My knees got soft, my nipples got hard, and I wanted sex on the sidewalk, sex bent over that nearby car, sex up against the wall of the pub, and who cared if my naked petunia got smashed up against the window for all to see in the process? Vlaine is a prince from one of the four Seelie royal houses, and it's difficult to look at him directly when he's in high glamour. He's gold and bronze, velvet and steel, and his eyes blaze with the stellar grandeur of a wintry night sky. He is so unearthly beautiful that it makes a part of my soul weep. When I look at him, I hunger for things I don't understand. I ache to be touched by him. I'm terrified of his touch. I think sex with him might undo my essential cellular cohesion and shatter me into fragments of a woman that could never be pieced back together again. If Vlaine were a signpost, it would read, "Abandon all personal will, ye who tread here." And while I never thought much about will back home in Ashford, here I've begun to think it's all I really have to call my own. I tried regarding him with a slightly peripheral vision. It didn't help. My clothing was painfully constricting, and I battled the overwhelming urge to remove it. Fae princes drip such raw eroticism that it provokes a woman's senses beyond anything she was meant to experience, turning her into an aroused animal, willing to do anything for sex. While that might sound like it promises the kinkiest escapades and most incredible orgasms of your life, they don't grasp basic human concepts like death. Time has no meaning to them. They don't need to eat or sleep, and their sexual appetite for human women is enormous, all of which leads to one inevitable outcome. A woman caught in a fae prince's spell usually gets fucked to death. If she survives it, she's Praya, an addict, a void of insatiable sexual need that exists for one purpose, to serve her master. And that's determined by whoever is currently giving her sex. The first few times I encountered Vlaine, I'd begun stripping where I stood. I was getting better at resisting, because I was catching my hand every time it moved to the hem of my sweater before I began pulling it over my head. Still, I wasn't sure how long I could keep it up. "Mute it," I demanded. A slow smile curved his lips.
"I am muted. Whatever you feel is not coming from me."
"You're lying." I briefly visited Christian's charge that I was thinking of having sex with someone. Vlaine was not a someone. He was a something.
"I am not. You have made it clear you will not abide my sexing you up. Perhaps you are, how do you humans say it, in heat?"
"We say that about animals, not people."
"Animals, people, what difference?"
"Seelie, unseelie, what difference?" Silvery flakes crystallized in the air between us, icing the night with royal displeasure.
"The difference is too vast for your puny mind to comprehend."
"Ditto."
"You are not naked, on your hands and knees, offering me your pretty little ass, Michaela, which is what you do when I use the Shiva High on you. Would you like a reminder?"
"Try it, and I'll kill you."
"With what?"
I yanked my hand from the button at the back of my skirt and went for the spear holstered beneath my arm, but it was gone. He'd taken it the last time we'd met, too. I wanted to know how he was doing it. I had to find a way to stop him. He paced a circle around me. By the time he'd completed it, his gaze was as chill as the night air.
What have you been up to, She-Seer? You smell different.
I've been using a new moisturizer.
Could he smell my recent cannibalization of his race? Though I no longer suffered the dramatic effects of it, did a residue stain my skin as it had tarnished another less tangible part of me? I had eaten unseely, not seely. Would that make a difference to him? I doubted it. The bottom line was I'd eaten Fae to steal the power of the Fae, and I'd just fed it to another human, and I would never admit either of those facts to any Fae.
Like it? I said brightly.
You are powerless to defy me, yet stand before me dripping defiance. Why?
Maybe I'm not as powerless as you think. What would a bite of Seely royalty do to me? I'd find out if I had to. Surely I could null him long enough to sink my teeth in somewhere. The thought was a little too tempting. All that power, mine in one tiny bite. Or 10. I wasn't certain exactly how much I had to eat to get super strength, when I wasn't mortally wounded to begin with. He considered me a moment, then laughed, and the sound made me feel suddenly ebullient, drunk with euphoria.
Stop it, I hissed. Quit amping up my feelings.
I am what I am, even when I mute myself, as you say. My presence overwhelms mere humans.
Bull, I cut him off. When you were kneeling on the beach in Faerie and touched me, you felt like a man and only a man. That wasn't entirely true, but it had been better than this. He could tone himself way down if he chose. I know you can do it. If you want my help finding the book, turn it off, and turn it all off, now, and keep it off in the future. I'd picked up a superstition from Danny, the young She-Seer I'd met recently, who'd warned me about casting certain words on the wind I didn't want traced back to me. So now, whenever I spoke of the She-Seer aloud, out in the streets, especially at night, I tried to remember to call it simply the book. Blaine shimmered, flashed brilliant white, then faded and re-solidified. I tried not to gawk. Gone were the iridescent robes, the eyes that burned with a thousand stars, the body that radiated the fire of Eros. A man stood before me in faded jeans, a biker jacket, and boots, the sexiest man I'd ever seen. A golden horny angel stripped of wings. This Blaine I could deal with. This Fae Prince I could keep my clothes on around.
Walk with me.
He offered his hand. She-Seer, walk with Fae? My every instinct screamed no. I'll know you if I touch you. He considered me a moment, as if debating whether to speak. Then he shrugged, but not well. The human gesture only made him look more alien.
Only if you wish, Michaela. The desire to null or the instinct to defend yourself must be present. If you do not desire it, you may touch me.
He paused.
I know of no other Fae who would permit such intimacy and risk. You speak to me of trust. I am giving it to you. Once you touch me, you could alter your intent, and I would be at your mercy.
I liked that. Him at my mercy. I took his hand. It was a man's hand, warm, strong, nothing more. He laced his fingers with mine. I hadn't held hands with anyone in a long time. It felt good.
You spend time in my world,
he said.
Now I will spend time in yours. Show me what it is you care for so deeply that you would die for it. Teach me of human ways, Michaela. Show me why I should care too.
Teach this ancient creature who, in his most recent incarnation, was over 142,000 years old? Show him why he should care about us? Right. And I was born yesterday. You never stop, do you?
Never stop what?
He said innocently. Trying to seduce. You just switch tactics. I'm not stupid, Blaine. I couldn't teach you to care about us in a million years. But you know what really pisses me off? I shouldn't have to justify our existence to you or any Fae. We were here first. We have the right to this planet. You don't.
If might makes right, we have all the right to this world we need. We could have exterminated your kind long ago.
Why didn't you?
It is complicated.
I'm listening.
It is a long story.
Got all night.
A decisions are not for humans to know.